It's time to kick it off, yeah. It's time to do a great MMA show. It's here with topics you like, out of the desert where the sun gets hot. So drop on into that MMA spot.
People absorb the guilt from suicide of a friend or family member.
Mm-hmm.
Because they ask, it kicks off, very natural by the way, kicks off the grieving process. What could I have done? What should I have done? I can't believe this has happened. You know, there's seven stages to the grieving
sure.
process, right? And that false guilt pattern will continually keep you in the grieving cycle if you can't identify it. Okay? So that false guilt, what could I have done? Could you have performed better in order to get them? And that's the question you're asking
yeah,
yourself, right?
Exactly.
So anxiety gets created.
That's right.
Because you got rejected.
That's
because
right.
maybe your performance wasn't at the right level. And that's the only thing you can control. Let me give you a definition of genuine guilt. Genuine guilt is a grieving produced by the Holy Spirit over a situation where you know deep in your heart, hey, I my actions, my attitude, my words were really hurtful and damaging to someone. And I feel really bad about that, as you should. But allow that to be something that God reveals to you versus human beings putting on you.
That's right.
And there's a major difference in
there is a major difference because you talk to some people and they will tell you Christians are the one that pushed me away from Christianity. Christians are the one that pushed me away from God. They're so this, they're so that. They said this. And the thing that they said to that individual was the most hurtful thing they could have said. And it might have come in their mind from a good place. I don't know. But the delivery method was the most hurtful delivery message. And so that becomes a guilt or a rejection that they feel. So they're no longer going to go down that path.
Absolutely.
And I've seen that.
Sure.
And it's so hard. And talking about the subject, I just want to encourage people who are believers that just really be careful of what you say. Really be careful, because what you say could really push someone away from God. And what we want to do is bring people closer. So just be careful when you're out there. Don't be on your high horse and sending out all these judgmental things. Well, you're doing this and you're doing that. Okay, you guys might come from two different morality standpoints. The believer has their morality standpoint from what God is saying. And then someone else might be having the morality standpoint from what the world is saying. That's completely different. And so you have to understand that where they're coming from is nowhere close to where you're at. And maybe they don't understand why these points that you believe are so important. They have no idea.
What I call the I'll reject you before you reject me.
That's right. Exactly.
So you start playing that game. You know, well, you know, someone may have had a bad experience with a pastor in the past.
Mm-hmm.
That could have been a youth pastor or,
mm-hmm.
you know, or of a different faith or whatever it is. And that experience was so negative on them and it dumped all that rejection in their tank. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So now in their experience, all pastors.
That's right.
You know, and I don't want anything to do with God or faith or church because all
right.
pastors, well, all they're doing is confirming their pain, so they find all the negative. And so, well, I'll reject you and stay away from you before I have the opportunity to be rejected by you. And that becomes a survival mechanism.
That's exactly right.
And we see it in relationships between children and parents, you know, parents and grandparents, husband and wife is the worst part. And it's very unfortunate because these two people come together and they attracted to each other, you know, and they're usually opposite. Okay, the quiet is usually attracted to the outgoing person.
That's right.
And the you know, fun-loving, lack of detail person is attracted to the organizational-minded.
That's right.
Right. And then they begin to attack because the cute, funny things that attracted me to you aren't cute and funny anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and she looks at him with those big eyes and says, oh, he's so cute and funny with all his stories and jokes, right? And then they get married and it's the same stories and same jokes. And then,
that's
you know,
right.
and he's not as cute and funny anymore, or whatever it is, right? And then they begin to attack
each other, yep.
You know, and they start to draw. It's kind of a weird thing, and we don't realize it because I say it this way, that one of the few animals, one of the few creatures that know what water is are fish. Fish don't know what water is because they live in it. They're not seeking it out,
mm-hmm.
right? Most other creatures are looking to,
water.
To go get drinks.
Yes.
Where's my water? And I need that to survive.
Right.
Okay. Well, see, we do the same thing emotionally. We live in the rejection and the pain, so it's so difficult for us to see it, unless maybe it becomes so intense and we lose something around
That's
it.
That's right.
Then it will wake us up and we go, I'm a fish out of water, so to speak. This is bad. So when they attack each other, they play that rejection game. Now, I know what she's going to say if I say this. So I'm going to say this instead, right? Mm-hmm. You do that mental.
Oh, yeah.
Steps ahead.
That's right.
You know, because you're expecting that wave of rejection.
That's right.
And I'll reject you before you reject. I'll cut you off, and I don't want to listen to you, and I don't have all of that pain and that hurt comes around. And Amber, let me say this too. It's in my very, very own opinion, my humble opinion, that people do get rejected by faith and God and church. They have negative experiences around. They want nothing to do with it. At the same time, it's my experience, all the rejection that comes from faith in church that people experience, I find they use that as an excuse to stay away from God as well. Not denying the pain happened. I get it. But that's a human being they're dealing with, not God. And they struggle with that in their head. So mm-hmm. they use it as an excuse to say, oh, I want nothing to do with God and all of that. Well, the truth is, God's calling out to him. He's going, hey, come here. I want you to know me.
He wants. You know? He's calling him. Yeah. Exactly. And I don't even know if they realize that, though.
No, I would agree with you. They don't. Because they've been hurt so bad.
They have.
Yeah, my wife's a perfect example. Maybe another time I'll tell you the story. But it's a perfect example of that until one day she finally went, all right, if you're real and you exist, prove it to me. And it's like, well, it's on then because God will do that for
you. Yeah, person. I would love to talk to her about that because I did have a lady on the show who was Jewish, okay? And, you know, they don't believe in the Messiah of Jesus Christ like we do. And so one person in her family ended up becoming a Christian, messianic, believing that Jesus is the Messiah. Okay, because they're still waiting for the Messiah to come, the Jewish people, but he already came. And so she literally said, you have to reveal yourself to me. And oh my gosh, did he reveal himself in the most extraordinary way. And so I want to tell you guys, if you're wanting to know if there really is a God or if he really does care about you, I want you to be brave enough to ask him to reveal himself to you. Be brave enough to do that and see. And hey, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I don't think I am. But if I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
No, Amber, I agree with you.
It's a big step, and you have to be brave to do that because, you know.
And I just, along with, as you're saying, encourage your listeners to, if you think God's calling out to you, you really want to see if there's God, do everything you can. Brave is a good word. Because it takes a lot of courage.
It does.
To separate all of man's junk.
It does.
And say, okay, show me God. I don't care what my pastor says. I don't hear his opinion. You can't go on that. You just say, God, show me. And God will reveal himself.
He will.
You know. Now, Amber, I talked about overt rejection. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to backtrack a little bit back on the idea of rejection. Because I want to make sure I'm not rejecting others with my outward actions and words. There's another level of rejection that people deal with. That it's not so apparent, and it's simply called covert rejection.
Mm.
It's very covered, it's very unseen. But going back to what we said earlier in the show about just that icky feeling you get, but you can't really put your finger on it,
mm-hmm.
right? You know something's wrong when you left the conversation, the situation. It feels kind of wonky, but you don't know what it is, okay? So to give more of an example, it's an extreme example, but it works. If you have the overprotective parent, right, that always is hovering over the child. You know, let mommy do that for you. Let daddy take care of you. Don't go outside. Don't wear that. Wear this instead. Over time, that sends a message to the child. You can't make decisions on your own.
Ooh.
You can't handle life in its circumstances. I need to protect you all the time because you're not capable. Now, again, parents aren't saying that out loud, right? Children aren't, you know, forming it in that way, but that's kind of how they start feeling emotionally because they're always being protected from everything. Okay, so that's covert rejection. That sets adults up to fail.
Because it does.
They live in constant fear and they're afraid of everything. So it's staying in a small world.
I think we've all experienced those adults that can't do anything for themselves.
Yeah, exactly. That's one way, you know, the rolling of the eyes.
Yeah. You know, I hate that. And I did it. I hate that as I roll my eyes.
You make a comment and someone looks at you and they roll their eyes and go, ugh, and they walk out of the room. Okay, that's rejection. They didn't say it, but they sent the message. What you said and did, I don't like, and there's something wrong with it, you know? So the overprotection, the requiring no consequence to actions. So as a child is brought up in their environment and they're never held accountable, and I'm not talking about yelled at and what you did was wrong and, you know, getting kicked or whatever, but what I'm speaking about is parents who let their kids do everything and anything. Well, that's just the way they are. You know, kids running around, again, extreme examples, kids running around in the store, pulling stuff off of shelves. We've all been there.
Oh, yeah.
And moms and dads just kind of smile and laugh, you know. And they let it go on. And we know that that's what happens in the home as well, right? So when a person is brought up and they're not taught how to be responsible for their attitudes and actions, that's a covert rejection pattern. So covert is one of those things that's hard to identify. It's what I've worked with most in people's lives, because usually it comes from very loving and caring people that are, in their mind, doing their best to protect their children or trying to let them be everything and anything and never hold them accountable to their actions and their attitudes they have. So that's the other form of rejection. So if someone's listening today and they can identify with covert rejection growing up, they want to make sure that they're not doing the same to other people around them. Okay? Watch the sarcastic, biting remarks.
Mm-hmm.
The person that always tells the joke but throws the truth in,
mm-hmm.
so that if anyone gets offended, they can always say, I was just joking.
Right.
That's a very difficult person to deal with.
That is.
And I will know because I'm the king of it. I'll admit, I am the best at sarcasm.
Where does that come from?
I think part of it's just the way I'm made. Like, I find it quickly in situations and conversations. I can be very sarcastic, and I think it's funny.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of it is I've learned to really master it as a way of my survival mechanism. You know, I can get the crowd laughing quickly if I throw out a sarcastic remark, right? Or one of those, right, because I'm sure you're perfect and you never do anything
That's
wrong,
right.
You know, and I can walk away and I can get out of a situation and make someone else look bad.
Mm-hmm.
I've learned to do that as a survival mechanism.
Mm.
Well, I have to be very careful with being married and having children, because nothing kills a child's spirit quicker than a sarcastic, biting remark from a parent. So, you know, God's helped me to be really, through my wife, be really aware of that, because she's like, hey, you got to be careful. Sure, it's funny, but to a point, it's not funny.
Mm-hmm.
So if one of your listeners identifies, hey, that's kind of me, you know, be careful, because that's how people feel rejected by you. You want to say what you need to say, look them in the eye, say it, let them know you love them, and move on.
Yeah, because I have dealt with those people, and I have felt rejected by them. I don't know why they can't just say what they want to say in a nice way. Why do they have to do it in a big crowd where everyone's around, mm-hmm. and say something? I mean, that's so hurtful, and it's embarrassing.
Absolutely. I mean, well, embarrassing is a great way to say it, because you're left there standing looking, feeling like an idiot.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So if you identify that's kind of how you do, you have to stop doing that. No, stop rejecting other people. Dump that cycle. Hey, that's me. I'll own it, and I'm going to be different. And when people try to reject me, I refuse to receive that false guilt. I'm not getting on that train with you. One of the ways to frustrate the heck out of people is don't get in their rejection conversation with them. And you know who, and whoever's listening, know who, there's probably two or three people running through their mind right now, okay? And if they just refuse to get into those conversations and just look at them and smile and say, I love you and I'm not getting in that conversation, it frustrates the heck out of the other person, because their ammunition is gone. They have nothing to do now. Because my view, Amber, what people really want in life is they want open, honest, loving communication.
That's right.
That's what they want. Tell me the truth, love me about it. And let's go on. And we don't have to agree on everything. But let's be honest. So my model for my life is Jesus. And I look at him, and Jesus cut to the heart of things, looked at people straight in the eye, told them the truth, but loved them anyway. So that's how we want to be with people.
Yep. I agree with that.
When you love it, if your husband could always, and he's a great guy, Phil's a great guy.
Yeah.
But wouldn't it be great if he could just sit down and talk with you, tell you what you, you know, the truth, cut to the matter, but you know, you're not going to get beat up by it.
That's right.
You know?
That's the thing. When you have those conversations, a lot of people leave it feeling beat up.
Mm-hmm.
Feeling even more worthless, or feeling more rejection. And it doesn't always leave a good impression.
No, not at all. And my wife, she's, you know, I'm a good guy. I love my wife. I want to be married. And she has taught me, you know, the longer we're married, how I need to communicate with her. Not everyone needs it the same way.
That's right. Right.
That's a whole nother show.
That's right.
But to just tell her directly, and I know when I'm about ready to say something, and I go, oh, can I keep it in? Because I think it's funny, but she's not going to think it's funny. Right? And mm-hmm. I want to be sensitive to her. I don't want her to feel rejected.
Right.
I want her to feel loved by me. I want her to stay, you know, connected and open in our marriage. So that means I have to stop being selfish. And just because I think it's funny mm-hmm. and I'm going to say it, I gotta stop that and not reject her that way. And just be direct with her, say what I want to say, and keep loving her. You know, it takes time.
It does. A lot of work.
Well, and you said something, I know we're just talking here. You said something earlier where, you know, we're talking about the different things of what God's values are and what he wants for us. And it takes time to understand those things. You can't just give a 30-second YouTube video or Facebook post and think we're going to unpack it all.
You can't. Okay?
So this stuff about your rejection and the false guilt you're dealing with, this isn't something that goes away overnight. You have to be committed to changing it and to being a different person with it. You have to be committed with your spouse knowing, look, I'm in this for the long haul. I'm not going anywhere. So we're just going to spend our time breaking these patterns, loving each other, and making ourselves better. But you have to be committed to it.
That's right.
Because it doesn't go away overnight.
That's right. Kevin, you've come and brought so much interesting information, and I hope people leave feeling impacted and feeling like, okay, they can make a difference in other people's lives by just changing what they do in themselves. That's why I always say you change the world by changing the world of one. Okay, so if I'm going to change my attitude, if I'm going to change the way I reject people, so I'm going to try not to reject people, I'm going to try and change the pattern so that the next generation will have even better than what I had, then these are great steps to do that. And I'm glad you identified some of those ways where you reject people. Remember, you can always get in touch with me at my website, AmberMayShow.com. That's the AmberMayShow.com. Write me at P.O. Box 5162, Peoria, Arizona, 85385. Remember, instead of thinking about number one, just yourself, think about number two, somebody else, because eventually number two will look out for you.